Well, welcome back to another episode of the XR Industry Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Scoggin, the CEO and co-founder of Arbor XR, along with my co-host, Will Stackable, CMO and co-founder as well. And today we are sitting down with Sophie Thompson, the CEO and co-founder of Virtual Speech, and Hema Malero, the project manager of XR at IE University. IE University is a global institution located in Spain. And Sophie and Hema are here to talk to us about how they've partnered together to integrate VR soft skills into training for the students' curriculum. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here from Spain.
Sophie, I'd love to start with you. I know you've got a pretty interesting backstory of how virtual speech came to be. So we'd love to hear that.
Yeah. So we created virtual speech originally as a solution to my own problem, which was a fear of public speaking. And actually, it was more than that. I had severe social anxiety, so I wouldn't order my own food in a restaurant, for example. I'd like ask my dad to, or ask my friends to. And I had a presentation coming up at university that was going to be assessed, and I was very studious, so it was very important to me that this presentation went well. But I was terrified of speaking at this point, to the point that I was waking up 3 months before with absolute dread, like with real nerves about the situation. And yeah, so I was speaking to my business partner, Dom, and at the time he was just one of my friends, and he worked at Jaguar Land Rover, the car company, and he was working with virtual reality there. And really, it was his idea that VR could provide a unique place to be able to practice a skill like public speaking, so that I could build up not just my skills, but my confidence as well. So it was a psychologically safe place to do that, where there were no real world consequences, people weren't looking at me. And so, yeah, we created virtual speech, and it was the first VR app to overcome the fear of public speaking. And I used it as a way to bridge the gap between total avoidance and being able to do that presentation. And within 18 months of creating virtual speech, I went from not ordering my own coffee in Starbucks to being interviewed live on BBC World News. So that shows the power of virtual reality for
And now to the Arbor podcast, seen by millions of people.
Yeah, so that's how we started. So really, to be honest, it was an accident. It was just a bit of nerdy fun that here we are nearly 10 years later, and we've expanded out into soft skills more generally. But at the core is not just improving competence, but confidence to use those skills.
That's awesome. I do think it's so powerful when you create a solution out of your own pain, kind of, right? I mean, it's so personal, and you make sure it works because you want it to work for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be honest, no one else was actually meant to see it. We didn't really think anything of it. And within 6 months, we had 100,000 downloads, and we were getting lots of reviews, because back then it was like, yeah, VR, Google Daydream, or just you used to like slot your phone into Cardboard or Merge VR. And so it was on the app store. So people were finding us through there. And I think one of the like pivotal moments for us was somebody wrote a review saying how it had helped their son with his autism. And we were like, oh, actually, maybe this could actually be something bigger than just ourselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. This started back in 2016. Is that right?
Yes. The first version, I think, was February 2016.
Okay. I mean, I like to call that out because it's almost a decade, right? That's a long time in VR. And we also started back in 2016, right? What was it? 2016? So we've been doing this for a while. It was fun. Sophie and I got to meet recently at Pico's 10-year birthday party anniversary. I don't know what you want to call it, but there was a handful of like the 10-year crew, which was just kind of fun. So that's cool. Been doing it for a long time.
And I think we agreed that we'd have a joint party, didn't we, in LA next year?
Oh, yes. Right? Oh, yeah, right. When it's our 10-year. You know what? You're right. I came back and said, Will, we've got to figure out a way to do something for sure. Thank you for reminding me. And now I'm held accountable to the millions of listeners. Emma, I'd love to hear from you now. Tell us from your perspective, what motivated IE University to even think about integrating VR into the curriculum?
Nice. Okay. Thank you for the introduction of IE, but just to be everybody on the same page, IE is an international university that all the content is in English. We are based in Madrid and also in Segovia, but most of our curriculum is in English, right? So that fits a lot, anything that it will be related to the VR field, because that means that we need to go outside, especially America and United Kingdom. So when we were talking about what are the trends in that moment, actually, Sophie and the team met my team of learning innovation before the COVID. They were doing like a kind of pitch elevator training in that moment with the headsets, the Quest 3, one, sorry, that they were connected with the battery. So that was previously to COVID. So we must say that when Meta started to be, you know, Mark Zuckerberg started to be crazy with the metaverse in that moment, that was true. I mean, I remember that it was January 22. Correct me, Sophie, if I am wrong with a date, but I think it was that New Year's perspective that he started with the Horizon Wall and all the Meta Quest 2 coming. And in that moment, our, you know, CEO and all the strategy management, they wanted to say, we want headsets, VR headsets in the classrooms. So that was the main idea at that moment, you know, because, you know, the fever of metaverse. In that moment, we were very good, and we have a lot of rankings we are well known from the blended program. So we saw in that moment a solution of connecting everybody in the metaverse through the virtual reality headsets to go a little bit in another step further in the way of 2D with this, you know, with all the podcasts and all the Zooms and Teams and video conference, but going back to another level. But for us, it wasn't only for the blended programs. Then we end up to see what is going to happen for the people who are on campus. How can we use this hardware with this software? So finding out over there, and also with our relations, we contact in that year with Sophie and Dom from Virtual Speech. And in that year, we were an initial really pilot, because even we need to train. And I'm going to say this word that sometimes it has to be with Christianity, but I really like it. Evangelize, you know, just to say people that we should be innovative. We are innovative, and we are an innovative institution. But I mean, we went go a step further again in the curriculum and in all the subjects that they are on campus. And we realized that all of our programs, no matter what school you belong to, you need to be trained in public speaking and all the discourse and all this kind of of speaking to be a good leader. That is one of our main mottos at IE, right? So we saw like a transversal program, and in 2023, we started to end up to do an exercise compulsory for more than 1,000 students that they were in master's programs. And that was, you know, the initial step of not bringing hardware and software in the classroom, but combining with our curriculum. And it goes without saying that behind that, it was a training to the faculty, training also this kind of evangelization, you know, that everybody needs to be on the same mission and vision. And I must say that after 2 years of working hard in different programs, we are working now in the future, new students coming in September, and we are including between five and seven more courses to use virtual speech in this case, right, as a public speaking compulsory exercise. And I will tell you later how we do in the logistics and how can we bring in to their homes the software and hardware.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great to hear that at least one positive thing came from Zuckerberg's go crazy moment, right? And that IE University has fully embraced VR. I'd love to hear about how the students and faculty have responded to the VR training, maybe both anecdotally and if there's any kind of measurable outcomes you've seen in confidence or presentation skills.
These are for sure two different sides of the coin, because we have teaching and learning. For the learning experience is going to be, you know, the final numbers that I'm going to give you. But that year, 2022, 2023, it was difficult to find adopters. And especially the early adopters, they were because they are very close to innovation. It's the same with artificial intelligence we are seeing now in all the companies, right? And with virtual reality, we need to train them. But once that we train, especially, you know, us, not only because Sophie's here and she is, you know, talking about her, company, and especially the value of speaking virtually gives the a space that the students can train at home. In that case, you know, we use metrics, and that metrics help not only for the student, also for the faculty. And we started to, you know, let them know how valuable is for the faculty that they cannot listen to all the people every day to train them and to let them know what should be improved, what is fine, and what is should be better, right? And that is only an asset for the two sides of the coin, for the people who is training and for the trainee. And also, I think apart from that, it's invaluable that now with the artificial intelligence, because also Sophie can explain to you, but I mean, the artificial intelligence is helping a lot. Once that you are in the virtual simulation, after that, when you end up, you have like a metrics, and that allows you immediately to know where should I correct or not. And the technology helps and transform the way that we are teaching and learning. So that was a good asset.
So interesting. So Sophie, I want to go back to you. What was your initial approach to working with IE University, and how did you choose virtual speech modules to fit into their academic structure?
Yeah, so as Hema mentioned, we've been working together for a while now, and pre-pandemic. And I think when we were first approached by IE, I was immediately impressed with the hunger for innovation and improving how students can learn. So it felt like a very natural partnership from the beginning, because we were both on the same page in terms of one, learning, but two, how tech can enhance learning for students. So we've had a very collaborative approach from the start. I think even from that first pilot with that first class, which I think our first class might have even only had, say, like 20 people, it was really small. But from then and then onwards, so that's what, 5 years, we very much listen to what the students are saying. So Hema is listening in terms of, excuse me, how it can be incorporated into classrooms, how faculty respond to it, how students respond to it. And then we're taking that feedback on board. And to be honest, we build out features as well based on that. Because if 100 students at IE think that this would be helpful or this would improve the experience, then chances are there's going to be thousands of students elsewhere who feel the same. And then in terms of the modules, I think the first one, or certainly an early one, was around storytelling. Storytelling, presentations, and then we've evolved a bit more into, say, we have a Shark Tank style experience, so that can then go into entrepreneurship programs as well.
I probably should have asked this before, but can you set the table a little bit for us? How is virtual speech used on a daily basis in the university? If a student puts on a headset, what are they experiencing? Can you kind of talk us through it?
Yeah, so if we take public speaking as the first example. So they'll put on the headset and then they can pick environments of different sizes with audiences of different sizes. They can upload their own presentation slides, notes, questions, or IE can push the questions down from the admin side as well. And they deliver their presentation. The audience is listening to what they're saying, so we'll ask them questions based on their unique presentation. So it's different then for every student. And then they get feedback, and that feedback is divided up into two. It's feedback both on the delivery and the content. So the delivery is things like pace, volume, tone, how many ums and ahs you've said, eye contact. Then on the content side, it's more how the audience is likely to have perceived you. So if you said X thing that has made you sound slightly aggressive, or Y thing where you could sound more empathetic if you said this instead. And so there's different levels of feedback. And then that feedback is also in other areas of the app where you can have role play conversations. So in the context of universities, you can practice a job interview. So you can upload your CV or resume, the job description, and have an interview that's tailored to your unique experience, the exact job you're applying for, and then you get feedback on that, you get suggested responses, and then you get all the feedback on the delivery and content that I just mentioned. And the next step is to have an AI coach, which is actually launching on the 3rd of June, so very soon. So that kind of is the last step in like the learning cycle. So you have your practice, then you have feedback, then you have reflection on that feedback, and then the coach is closing that loop and helping you to apply what you've learned to real world situations.
I have two comments or questions. One, it's interesting, you know, when you first explained this, I'm thinking about just getting in reps to overcome the fear, but it sounds like it's a lot more than that. There's actually feedback to improve the quality of your, you know, or your ability to public speak. Maybe tell us a little bit, like what does that feedback loop look like?
Yeah. So there's the practice element where you can just stand in front of an audience in different rooms or have a role play conversation. Then there's also in-app training material. So there's a 10-minute exercise on mindset, for example, and building your confidence before you have any of these conversations or presentations. And similarly, there's a 10-minute exercise on eye contact. So you can also learn before you then go and practice, and then you receive the feedback, which is based on learning design frameworks and proven theories around each of those skill sets.
Okay. Yeah, very interesting. And tell me, I guess, yeah, I'm curious, and you're the perfect person to ask because you had the fear of public speaking. You put on the headset and you feel like there's X number of people in front of you. I mean, how well does that mirror the fear of real public speaking for someone?
Yeah, so it evokes that emotional response. So it does, logically, you know that there's not people there. And even in the role play simulations where the avatars look slightly different and they're more like computer generated, even though you logically know they're not real, you're looking at them and they're avatars, they don't look exactly like you and me. There's other things that go into evoking that emotional response. So for example, something we noticed after the pandemic is that more people were using the public speaking content for a simple reason of they weren't used to standing up and presenting or standing up in meetings, even if it was with just five people. They weren't used to like that attention because we were all safe in our 2D laptops where we could sit down and be comfortable and nobody was actually looking. Yeah, exactly. No one was like looking at us in the same way. So yeah. Sorry, I forgot what your original question was now.
No, just about the how real it feels, like how well does that mimic the fear that you felt, you know, and you feel in real life?
Yeah. So I spoke to one of our clients in the insurance industry a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying that one of their directors had used virtual speech, and they were somewhat cynical about using VR and AI for these role play conversations. And this person had been in the industry for 20 years, had obviously had lots of difficult conversations and presentations. And she said that once she was using virtual speech, she started sweating. So logically, she knows they're not there. Yeah, there's no impact, but she immediately felt put on the spot because they've asked her a question and they're looking directly at her, waiting for her to answer.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny. Well, I was going to say, we come out of the location-based entertainment years ago, and a lot of people are probably familiar with Richie's Plank, where you think you're walking out, you know, whatever, 20 stories up. And the very first thing we ever did in VR back in 2016, we had a kiosk in a mall around the holidays, and we had a 2x4 set up on the floor, and people were in line to do VR. And the number of people who were freaking out, say exactly the same thing, like they know 100% this is fake. And you got people falling on the ground because they think they're 20 stories up, you know, freaking out. So you're right. It is, but that's pretty wild to think that it's so visceral that they're sweating, you know, that's cool.
Yeah. The power of immersion and people who, if you haven't put on a headset, and probably most people listening have, but anytime you put a headset on somebody from the outside, it looks so silly. They're standing there waving their arms around, and then you put it on and you kind of have this light bulb moment where you feel something that you didn't expect. It's not like watching a movie. You know, there's that famous Stanford experiment where they had kids watch a video of Oscar the Grouch dancing around. And then afterwards the kids said, oh yeah, we watched a video of Oscar the Grouch. And then they did it in VR. And afterwards they asked the kid about it. And the kid said, oh yeah, Oscar was here. We talked to him. He was in the room with us. So the ability for VR to actually form memories and the way that your brain processes being in a virtual environment is just so different. And if you haven't experienced it, it's really hard to describe. I'm curious, you know, you talked about, I want to go back to something you said because I think it's significant. It sounds like you have now, you're building an AI-powered engine to coach students. You talked about being able to upload your resume and the job description, which to me, it's wild to think about. You could have it that dialed in. It's not just generic training. It's very specific and tailored. Could you just talk a little bit more about what it, you know, what that looks like? How does AI change the experience for these students?
Yeah, I mean, the AI makes it much more personalized for a start. So traditional, certainly enterprise anyway, traditional learning methods where if we've all done like boring learning before, where it's an e-learning course, it's not very interactive, and it's very standardized. So if you, something like public speaking, if you're terrible at it or if you're excellent at it, you've been given the same course and you're not actually meeting the person where they are, you're not tailored to their needs at all. Whereas I think the biggest impact that AI has in learning is that it can be completely personalized to the learner. You don't have to have pre-scripted scenarios and a one-size-fits-all approach. You can go in, and it also means that you can view your learning as something continuous rather than a one and done, because you've completed that course or you've completed that module. AI makes it much more personalized and adaptive. So as you improve, the AI can push you to improve further.
Hema, I want to come back to you. Sophie's got to talk about a lot of the fun side of this and all the positive outcomes. You have the challenge of managing 600 devices across multiple campuses. Maybe share a little bit about that. Like, what have some of the biggest challenges been?
The first challenge was how to control this, because everybody knows how it works, you know, taking a book from the library. But we need, the first thing that we thought it was, okay, we trust our students, and if we end up to give them a, like a loaning period of between 4-7 days, it's fine. But of course, we use, in this case, Arbor, you know, as a platform that we can just install to have this service, because at the moment we need to build it up. So the most efficient and, you know, way, strategic idea was to think what is in the market, and let's try to install it. And for us, it gave us, you know, the main 2 points, that automized data and also to tracking, and also in the way that for the blended programs that I mentioned before, that we are using our own metaverse, sometimes they have like end up writing to you and questioning to you, I cannot access to, you know, this app. And you say, okay, I'm checking in my Arbor device that you haven't been connected to Wi-Fi since you were in Madrid when I gave you the headset. So what's the point, you know, from the perspective point of view of IT service, it helps us a lot for that tracking, right? So the first challenge was this, because at the beginning we only have 300 the first year. Then we have ended up with 700, but some of them are Quest 3 and Quest Pro, and we don't give it for a loan. We only have Meta Quest 2, that they are the hardest, and they are the ones who can be mobilizing in the whole Madrid and in other countries, right? So the first challenge is that, you know, how we're going to control the software, and also on the other side, the software, and that is has a connection with your question before. Virtual speech not only gave me real-time feedback, it has a web browser, you know, login, where it's connected with each faculty. So what we do is, like, each faculty has the tracking of all his or students. It may happen 2, 3, or 4 sessions. And immediately, you know, the tracking, and also, you know, over there allows faculty to help in the grading. Because as I mentioned, now in 2025, we have discovered that if an exercise is compulsory, they will make it. If not, they will try it. And it has, you know, there was the challenges at the beginning. We started to offer virtual headsets like a way of training your speech for those interviews that you will be having in the following weeks after your graduation, or just before the exam, pitching exercise and so on. But you know that people are with a lot of issues at the moment, and especially an MBA student, sometimes you need to give them value. So that was the first, you know, the challenging of just how we are going to control, how we are going to try that the usage is going to be real for with compulsory exercise that they are linked to the syllabus. And the third idea that I can share is the faculty. We know, and I would like to mention him because Sophie is going to understand that I need to name the faculty, Javier Bernat, because he has been, you know, the most pusher for virtual speech in the way of public speaking. At the moment, I think he can be the most helper and the most, you know, early adopter for this content in the whole university. And then it's a way of taking coffees with everybody, and you need to let them know how it works, right? So that was the second official challenge that we have. But after that also is especially, and yes, it's really important, but I'm well just to mention that is the mission and the strategy of the university. They knew that they wanted a headset in the school and in the classroom. So with that idea, that is a vision. The mission then implements in the academic areas. And with this content of virtual speech or another context that we use in sessions, it links especially with the way of teaching. So it has been a challenge, but after that, you know, we are a big school and we have different ways of working with different students. And at the moment, I can say that when I talk and when I invited to say that we are more than 700 headsets that they are using most of the day in different campuses. You see that the long race that you have done, it has a mission, and especially it's always related with technology. Our university focuses in different ways of technology for learning and teaching. So that is a good point to start with.
Yeah, that's great. And it's funny, you mentioned in there kind of just the people side of change management, which we sometimes forget. I know there's, I think Scott Berkey, he talks at all the conferences and he always says donuts, you know, like take IT donuts. Like that's step one in bringing VR to your organization. As we maybe kind of move towards a wrap here, I'd love to give you both a chance, maybe kind of a quick hitter. Hema, you go first, and Sophie, you can bring us home. Giving advice to someone who's thinking about for the first time bringing XR to their university. What's one or two pieces of advice you might give, Hema?
For me, as I mentioned, it should be with a mission and vision from the academic side. Because anytime that somebody comes to our HR lab corners, I say, I don't want to bring to any classroom technology for technology. If you want to have the wow effect, they can come here anytime and I can show them. So it has to be a connection and a correlation of what they teach. Otherwise, there is no sense, because I can go to any other, you know, shopping center or mall and I can do the testing. And then the second one is that the faculty need to know what they want to ask the students. Otherwise, they are not going to show them what is the value. You know, we have two different sides of faculty, the ones who, in my case, faculty, because they are my stakeholders, but in the way that, you know, if I say, okay, you can try this, but if you haven't tried it, you haven't, you know, put on the shoes of the students, let them know that with this is we are going to win, you and me, because for us, this strategy is a win-win strategy for faculty and students. Of course, it has a wow effect, and it's going to be always like a wow effect for marketing and for everything that you want to post it in LinkedIn. But for me, it's not the wow effect for the students, but also how the faculty are also, you know, training and giving a step forward in the way of learning, because that matters. And that is what they make IE unique in the way that we challenge not only the students, but also the faculty. And last, I must say that I always, anytime that I have a training with the faculty, I always say, I'm not doing this for the students who are studying in 2025. I'm doing this and I'm teaching you this for the students who are coming for the following year, because it's not the future, it's now. And if you are not training this, you are lost.
That's great. What do you got for us, Sophie?
Wow, how can I top that? I think my golden nuggets of advice would be to measure the results from the start. I would say too often we see people who work everything out about before the program and before the pilot, and then they kind of take their foot off the gas a bit, and they prepared for the class, but they haven't prepared for how they're going to measure success or not. And it's really important to measure that whether you continue with immersive learning or not, to know what went well, what didn't go well, what was student feedback, and to also have any way to quantify the success on the learning outcomes as well. So with IE, for example, our most recent feedback shows that students have increased their confidence by 24% and their skills by 18% in just two sessions. And that's not a one and done. You know, we've done one feedback survey, so we're going to stop. That's consistent, and that's HEMA being committed to being consistent with that feedback as well. So if for some reason those stats ever change, we can go in and immediately fix that, and hopefully those stats will only increase. Which leads to my second point of having a real champion. So IE have been very unique in my experience in HEMA, for example, everything that the team have achieved in the last couple of years, rolling out to 700 headsets. That has happened in a very short period of time, and mostly over the last 2 years, and listening to students as well, and working then with software providers like us to improve the product for students and to optimize their learning. And my final nugget is around make it as easy as possible for yourself. So pick the most intuitive headsets, the most intuitive MDM, Arthur, and the most intuitive software as well, because it's if people are using VR for the first time, which a lot of students aren't, but a lot of them are as well, you want to make it as frictionless as possible. So I think always go with the most intuitive option, even if it may not be the most budget friendly, although they are all very competitive. I think ease of use is also really important.
Yeah, that, you're totally right. We've seen every successful XR program we know has a champion, and it's often we feel deeply, HEMA, for the champions. We know you've at times been on an island pushing this thing forward, so we just appreciate that so much. And I think you're right too, Sophie. It's got to be easy, especially the first time, right? You got to get momentum with making it easy. But I'm glad we got it here right at the end. That's incredible. After two sessions, you said 18% improvement in confidence, or 24% improvement in confidence, and 18% improvement in skills. Like, that's super,
sharing
super
here
impressive.
In the chat. I don't know if somebody can, but I'm sharing the data over there, that the business case that we have with virtual speech. But over there, it was like the answer, and we found out this kind of real improvements that Sophie has mentioned.
And when that comes to students as well, something like improving your confidence by 24% in two sessions, that's basically 20 minutes.
That's
if
crazy.
You continue that, that opens up a world of opportunities for you at such a young age.
Yeah. In less than 20 minutes in virtual speech, students have increased their confidence by 24% with public speaking. Nuts. And we will link, Emma, we will link that in the show notes for sure. Thank you both so much. I know you're busy and schedules are kind of crazy. We're coming in from all over the world, so we appreciate you making the time to do this. And look forward to seeing you guys again soon sometime. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for joining, and also for allowing us this space. Thank you.
So cool. I said it at the beginning, but just so cool to see someone take their own, real personal challenge and fear, and not just turn it into a business, but turn it into, go create a solution for themselves and for now thousands of other people.
I know I didn't say this on the main interview, but before we started, I was telling Sophie that as a kid in high school, I was deathly afraid of public speaking, and I somehow signed up for speech and debate. I actually don't remember why. I don't know if my counselor just put it in it. The high school counselor put me in it. And the first day of class, they made us get up in front of the class and do basically like a mini improv. And I thought I was going to die. My face was red. I was just, but it ended up being such a great experience, and I ended up loving it. And it broke whatever fear I had of public speaking. And I was thinking, I can see, because I lived through it. I know you don't experience this at all, Brad. You just live it. But for a lot of people, they say that public speaking is, a bigger fear than death for most people. So what a cool application. And it just was a reminder for me also hearing Sophie talk, the way they interacted, that finding the right content provider, someone who's experienced, who can understand your use case or even help you figure out a use case. Because VR is not just something you bolt on to an existing program. Like, it needs to be done intentionally and thoughtfully. So somebody like Sophie, who can come in and understand the needs and where they can fit in. And then what she said was so important, you know, you need to measure it. If you don't, you're not going to be able to scale it. You're not going to be able to grow it. You're not going to know if it works, which is something obviously we've been thinking about a lot recently with Arbworks, our insights, which is now in beta. I think we have 40 or 50 companies already in the beta, but being able to track what's happening in the headset and then passing that data wherever it needs to go, whether it's your existing LMS or a BI tool, and then being able to report on the ROI, report on, and even just have meet the basic requirement. Did somebody pass or fail? And having that in your system, that's so important, and it can be overlooked, especially when you're starting your XR program. It's a great interview, and excited to catch up with Sophie at AWE soon.
Yes, and I am going to end this with a little bit differently than normal. We've been having an internal debate if anybody actually listens to our outro. So we're going to throw a little challenge out there. If you actually listen to the outro, I want you to email me, brad@arborxr.com. In the subject, I want you to put gotcha, and we will send you a gift of some sort. So thank you for listening. If you made it this far, make sure you check us out wherever you consume your podcasts, and we will catch you next time.